You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Well, we're not actually going to troll on in today, but we're going to walk all around and through the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council. You know, for as long as they've been sponsors of the program and as long as I've known them all, there are so many things that you probably do know about the council and so many things that you don't. It's not a longline fishing organization, although it covers all of that and more. But what's really very interesting about this is the number of ways that it's grown over the years. But first, to explain what it is and what role it plays on the in a global position is Sylvia Spalding, communications officer at the WP Council. Happy 2018 already. My goodness. Huh?
Yeah, happy New Year.
Yeah, same to you. You know, it's I know that we all take it for granted because you guys are hands-on every day, and I certainly talk to somebody from the council every week. We do lots of things together throughout the year, and I'm constantly amazed and actually surprised and glad to have people discovering the council. When somebody says, oh, you're at that council thing, what is that thing anyway?
Well, we create the management plans for the fisheries beyond state waters.
Yep.
So
three miles out to the 200,
US,
right?
The EZ, yeah. But yeah. Even beyond, yeah. When our U.S. fishermen from Hawaii and the other U.S. Pacific Islands fish on the high seas, they're also covered by the management plan.
And by the way, in the country, there are eight of these councils. We are the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council. The other parts... There's seven more of them. It's not about geography. Well, it's more geography. But from what I understand is we have a pretty big job. The Westpac Council has got the most land miles of all.
Yeah, we have about half of the U.S. exclusive economic zone. Yeah. That's the 300 to 200 miles. Yeah. So it's 2.2 square miles or about 1.5 square nautical miles.
Yeah, yeah, million.
Yeah, yeah, million, yeah, million, 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 million. Yeah, not miles.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a small bucket. This is millions.
Yeah, millions.
And that means that, obviously, you know, people don't know the length and the breadth of the experts that are on staff and the experts that you draw from. It is a quasi-governmental organization. People don't know where that is. But I know that somebody always asks me, where does the funding for the council come from?
Yeah, so the funding comes through a NOAA line item.
Mm-hmm.
So we're paid by the federal government. However, as you say, we're an instrumentality, not an agency.
Yep.
And we also have nonprofit status.
And the reason why I love it, gang, is not only because he sponsored the show, but because they're a ground-up organization, and they are constantly looking here in Hawaii to get people into the process. And there are committees, there's a non-paid position, there's intern positions, a lot of other stuff, but more importantly, You have actually relied on the listeners of this show and other fishing entities to give you the scoop on stuff. I mean, how important is that? How important are we, the fishermen, to what you guys do?
Yeah, so yeah. When Congress made the Regional Fishery Management Councils in 1976, the idea is to make it regionally because the fisheries, the cultures are different in each region. So it's a bottom-up process. Mm. We rely on fishermen knowledge to see what the issues are and what the solutions are to those issues.
I've actually seen, and very pleasingly, since I started with the council a decade ago, at least longer than that, is there seems to be a much more willingness on behalf of people that really understand the bottoms-up part of it. Because I remember in the very beginning, it was very difficult for the council and the researchers to get any real valuable stuff from Kupuna and from people on certain beaches because everybody was skeptical. And who are these guys? And why are they asking all these questions?
Right. the Hawaiians, I mean, we've supported these Puvalu that have been occurring since 2006. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they want their knowledge to move forward and not be a dead knowledge that's in the libraries and museums.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so the council has been trying to work with them through these Ahamoku Island councils to be a where we can go to get their input into the fishery management decisions. But also... Mike, I wanted to say is, you know, when the councils first began, when I started covering it in the 80s, I was actually working for Hawaii Fishing News.
Yeah,
so I used to cover them
from
the other end, you know. And then I moved over to the council. I did. And so I could understand, because when I moved over to the council from Hawaii Fishing News, people were saying, oh, you're moving to the dark side, right?
You're moving to the restriction side. I think in the very beginning, and this is with Chuck, when I first started this the radio show, which is now, and I think this is our, I want to say 23rd year, you know. So I thought I was going to do it for a couple months, right? That was 23 years ago. And I've seen a real paradigm shift in the perception people have of the council, because it is, I've never heard of anybody that's gotten in any trouble from working with the council on anything. So when Sylvia was talking about these Fishers Forums, and the reasons why this bottoms up and why you should attend these is important, is because there are experts from NOAA and from the federal government that are here, and they listen, and they go back and they say, hey, you know what? It's not exactly the way we thought it was in Hawaii. We got to look at this, that, and the other thing before we make anything permanent.
Right. Yeah. But scientists are great. I mean, especially getting a slice in time. But the fishermen are there on the water every day for years.
Right.
So it's kind of merging those two. Mm. And then the traditional knowledge where it's been for, you know, a millennium, you know, to get all that knowledge together to better understand the fisheries, not only the ecosystem and the fish stocks, but sustaining our ability to catch the fish and to have it for our food.
And the neat thing about it, gang, is, as Sylvia was explaining earlier, this is the in the federal waters, but the fish don't know what quite, you know, whether they're in the federal waters or in the inshore waters, and they swim in and out of them all the time. And I think what actually happens is there's a great exchange of information, and maybe the rebirth of Hawaiian and things of Hawaiian is important with the redoing some of the fish ponds and getting some of the invasive species out and finding out, hey, you know, we thought that whole area was all wiped out, and now look, it'll come back if we take care of it.
Yeah, and not only the fish don't know the boundary, the fishermen
don't
respect the boundary.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, they go to both sides. And we really try to expect the indigenous cultures. We covered not only Hawaii, but American Samoa, Guam, and the Northern Mariana Islands. And we do produce a lot of our material in the Hawaiian language.
And speaking about that, let's talk about the material, because if you go to wpcouncil.org, and I remind you about that all the time, there is a wealth of information, and there's, I don't want to say parting gifts, but if you're a teacher or if you're doing a project, this is an invaluable, invaluable source. And I must tell you that since I've been connected with the Council of Sylvia, I've seen dramatic leaps and bounds and change, and the nature, the interactive nature of the website. If people haven't been there for a while, they're missing out, aren't they? You guys spend a lot of energy on this.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, there are different sections, and we're working right now to even update it further. But the section that I work on is on the educational section. So if you go education and outreach, you can go down there, download videos, posters.
It's so easy. I'm sitting here. I was teasing Sylvia when we first started. It looks like I'm the Westpac Council gift store. I mean, there's just so much stuff in there. And when you say, you know, what is it? I think that maybe the council has, just by the nature of who we all are, is been willing to accept things that are not strictly in the mode of what some of the other councils might do. That there's a lot more gray area between offshore and inshore with this group.
Right, and one big thing that's different between us is recreational versus non-commercial.
Of course,
they definitely have a recreational, and we say, well, ours is non-commercial because our recreational fishermen, you know, catch fish, share it, sell some for covering gas money.
And by the way, that whole thing went with what Roy Morioka and I were talking about a couple weeks ago and coming up again, and that's the increase in the commercial license and maybe getting a boat license instead of individual license. And one of the biggest shocks people have when they come here, and I know that you deal with this all the time, is people come over here from the mainland and say, wow, you guys sell your fish? And then when you go to the mainland, our guys say, what, you guys don't sell your fish? And you know, so there is, most people have to understand that who the council represents is a person that fishes because they like to fish, but also they want to eat.
Right, but one difference too is the collection of data on the mainland. Most people, non-commercial fishermen, recreational fishermen, have to get a license.
You got a tag for this,
and
a tag for that.
And then they get the data.
Right.
Because of our culture and everybody fishes, and we're all with, you know, coastal waters, you know, it's been hard to get that license, that registry, and to get the data of non-commercial fishermen. So it would really help to get that non-commercial data.
And here's another thing that I thought about, and I think this is very important. A lot of us know that there are rules and regulations. And yet some of us will see people breaking a rule or regulation and thinking, well, geez, if they're going to get away with it, why don't I go get my this and that too? Bottom line is, and that's why it's easier to some people to agree that we maybe need to have permitting and licensing to a certain respect to generate revenue so that we can have enforcement and be able to look at somebody and have them realize if you take this one, you're not supposed to, there are consequences.
Right. And another way that we've been looking at it too is through the Puvalu. They've identified like a code of conduct for fishermen.
I love that.
Beyond just regulations and that people get fines for. And so, as you know, we've had this fisherman code of conduct campaign that we did, and we have posters on it, and people could see it down at boat harbors. I saw it down at Makapu.
Yeah.
And the hotels embraced it too for their tourists, so that the tourists would respect the culture and the marine resources. So yeah, there's enforcement and regulations, but there's also just having people to have that code of conduct.
Yeah, and again, you'll know that every January and February, which we're going through as we speak, I always include in the buck stops here, my column in Hawaii Boats and Yachts, the code of ethics or the rules of conduct, and when you know that everybody else is looking at that and doing it, it makes it a lot easier. And I think, we fish for today, but most of us also fish for tomorrow. We have this innate knowledge. If the fish is real small, take the lures out of the water. It's humbug to eat them. Let's let them grow. Next year, they'll be twice as big.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of the code came through, too, also because, of climate change and the expectations that people are going to be moving from other small islands in the Pacific to Hawaii, which they have, and also in Guam. And so for newcomers and tourists to understand what the code is of Hawaii, how we, look at the ocean as our fish box and protect it.
Throughout the year, we're going to be discussing this, community-based management, some of the other things that are being worked on and everything. But I also want to make sure that you understand when Sylvia, who's the communications officer for the council, talks about us being a line item with NOAA, I want you to know that there's a tremendous amount of interplay between the council and DLNR, for instance. DLNR is grateful of the council's president's presence for outside because they got a big whack of property that they're looking at, right? So if they know that you guys are taking over from here, they can concentrate on theirs. But there's that gray area in between that everybody seems to be able to work together on.
Right. And actually, they're a member of the council. The council is made up of Mexico, federal and local state agencies and fishermen and environmentalists too. But the one thing we try to do is to make our regulations compatible or the same so that it's seamless to the fishermen. Yeah. So the bottom fish fishery is the best one is when they've reached their quota.
Yeah, they stop.
The fishery closes both state and federal waters.
But what was very interesting, sorry for interrupting, Sylvia, but what was very interesting to me is that they're also now relaxing some of the quotas because they're realizing that better evidence and better stock assessments might even improve our ability to get a little bit more. But, that's most people don't expect that. They think once you're under regulation, they're just going to keep grabbing it until it's gone.
Right. Yeah. And that quota is the international quota for big eye tuna.
Right.
Because at one time they thought the stock was being overfishing was occurring. Overfishing means the amount of effort. Mm-hmm. Overfish means the stock has gone down to an unhealthy level. But the latest stock assessments in the Eastern and the Western Central Pacific has shown that that hasn't occurred.
Yeah, they are no longer occurring.
Because of that, what they've done is they've reinstated the quotas back, I think, to the 2016 or 2014 level, because the Hawaii longline fishery, which uses the U.S. quota, every so many years, they've been getting a reduction, and so they put it back up.
Let me also take a moment to give our Longline Association and fishermen a pat on the back because they're the most regulated and watched group anywhere, and they've developed ways to deal with mitigating interaction with wrong species and all kinds of stuff, which has become actually standard for the industry in other places. So they look at our longline fleet. That's why I said in the beginning, Sylvia, that a lot of people think that the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council, it owns the longline industry, you know?
Right.
And they're just part of what you do.
Right. And bringing that up, you know, you talked about the Fishers Forum we have here locally, and we talk about local issues, but the council has also supported the International Fishers Forum, and some of the outreach materials I brought were the proceedings of these. And that, and we, what we do is we bring fishermen from around the Pacific to try to share knowledge and educate them about techniques against seabird and sea turtle bycatch that they can use also in their fishery.
As you know, we play host to this, and I've been connected with the Fishers Forum here for a long time. And I'm going to get lucky one of these days. I'm going to come on one of these trips, because I cannot believe how grateful some of our islanders are that come here and realize, hey, we care in Honolulu, in Hawaii, we care about what happens in Samoa and in Guam and the Marianas and CNMI. It's not, we're not give us everything and leave you nothing. It's the opposite in many respects.
Right. Right. And so we actually try to help them to develop their fisheries too. And so there's marine conservation plans to do that. And, you know, part of that, the quota sharing is to provide funds to those territories of the United States so that they can develop their fisheries.
Yeah, and by the way, gang, here's what I think is really outstanding. When Sylvia is talking about that, when let's say that they give up part of their quota in for compensation, and the compensation so they can build their fishery, but they may not even care about the longline fishery because it's too far out from them. They care about the little boats. How many boat ramps and ice houses and other facilities have been made by this magnanimous way of paying for what we're taking.
Right. You know? Yeah. So in America Samoa, you know, ice facilities, boat ramps, as you mentioned. In Guam, there was a fishing platform so that, you know, handicapped people with disabilities are able to fish.
Yeah, can go fish, yeah.
And then also in the Saipan, we've been working on ramps.
Yep. And that being said, and by the way, I've had the opportunity to meet some of these representatives that come up here for the forums. They actually can't believe it in some respects. Some people that have, say, trailered or tried to trailer a boat for 30 miles in the past now have a boat ramp kind of near where they live, and they think, oh, my goodness, these people are putting fish on my table, because that's what's happening, isn't it?
Right, yeah. And also enforcement boats. I mean, there's just actually one of the many things that I brought to you is that we have a monograph series, and in one of them it talks about the different fisheries, and another one talks about the fisheries development projects.
Okay, wait a minute. What's a monograph?
Oh, well, a monograph is, well, we put out a newsletter, and so the newsletter just gives you like an update of what happened in the quarter. A monograph looks at a particular subject and goes more in depth than it.
And I've got a couple. And let me tell you something, friends. You go to WPCouncil.org, and you're going to not only find out about a myriad of stuff, but there's something that comes out on a fairly regular basis, and it's the status of the fishery, and it's also other publications that in their own effort to go green, they're going to make it easier for you to get this material and keep it on your own hard drive if you want to. Lots and lots of stuff is available by clicking WPCouncil.org, including you're trying to expand the mailing list and cut back on the mailing. Have people go online instead of getting the stamp on something.
Right, yeah. We used to mail out everything, you know, to about 5,000 people, And so last year we started moving toward an electronic, and so we asked people to sign up for that.
Yeah.
This year we're going to be moving toward that even more. So we have graced some people, even though they didn't sign up for the electronic. We continue to mail them hard copy, but we're slowly going to wean away from that. So unless people send us, they should have received a postcard.
Yeah, they did. I think I got mine.
Yeah. And unless you call us and say, no, I need that hard copy because I don't use computers or whatever, or you like a hard copy, we're going to cut you off our list, and we're just sending out electronically. But so what you were talking about, Mike, is we put out these status of the fisheries reports every year, but they're really huge, like 300-page volumes.
Yeah, this is condensed, right?
Yeah, so what we try to do this year is to put one out that's very short and just gives, some of the highlights. And if you want more details, you can go to the larger volume.
I was going to review these highlights in this segment, but I'm not. We'll save it for another time. But it's truly astonishing. And the thing that I was trying to make mention of is that when you look at this stuff, and I'll tell you what I did. I didn't even tell Sylvia. I'll tell her right now on the air. There's so much on the website that I started grabbing pictures just because I like them. And I put them into a slideshow. And so every now and again, when I'm kicking back and trying to think of what I'm going to write about, I click on that one, and it's all fishing pictures that come up. And truly, I think that what we're seeing here is this is something that is passed from, usually from family member to family member. So if you got a grandpa that's in his 60s, he's probably pretty computer literate, or at least on there. He can give his, you know, his 6-year-old grandson, "Hey, go here, boy, look at this." And he can, it's like going fishing.
Right.
You know, I mean, it really is. It's truly wonderful. So I also want to touch upon the fact that even though most of you listening to the program are either fishermen or fish eaters or fish lovers, or you don't even know why you're listening, but you're listening, we're glad about that. I want to tell you that if you're a teacher or an instructor, I don't want to say if you want to look for an easy lesson plan, here it is, but you have a lot of information that's available at different levels of education.
Right. We have curriculum for students.
Color books.
Yeah. We also have lesson plans that are tied to national standards, you know, to make it easier for the teachers to put them into their classroom. We have a speakers bureau. You know, our staff is pretty limited, but we do have people who have agreed to go into classrooms, into clubs, and different places and speak. We have a lot of videos that can be shown. We have recipe books. We have so many different things for posters.
Some of you gang that are into a classroom situation, what Sylvia's talking about, it, I've had the pleasure of doing this, and I'm going to actually try to do it with the council as well. And that is, a speaker will come in there with a 15 or 20 minute presentation, followed by a 10 or 15 minute question and answer period. And it'll be just perfect because, number one, we know about people's schedules. And also, number two, depending on what level of class kids you're looking at attention span, right? Sometimes a half an hour, that's all you can expect out of a kid that's 7. But if you really want to have a exciting way to keep a kid involved, you get a speaker to come in there at no cost, and it's going to be wonderful for you.
Yeah, and we think it's very important to educate the students. And in fact, we're hoping to make a video about, where your fish comes from, because a lot of the students do get a lot of the conservation message in the classroom, and they don't get a lot of background on where does their food come from and why it's important to keep
that's really cool.
Fisheries.
I get so excited sometimes. It's really cool because there are some markets, Foodland, Safeway, some of the others, certainly Thomas Shiro's, Nico's, everybody that sells fish, they have a beautiful way of presenting it, but they're in fillets. And a lot of kids think, well, the fish comes from the store, that little box. Right. They don't understand that it came in as a 150-pound fish yesterday, and it's in this little box today. They like to see that trail.
Right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And our fisheries are so great because you can follow a fish from the boat all the way to market through the Honolulu fishery.
And one of the things that we did at the auction is we showed somebody on video the other day. Okay, this fish came from this boat fishing over here, and it was caught on such and such a date, and it's in this restaurant. How do we know that? It's all in a barcode.
Right.
And that is wonderful for any number of reasons. But I think, Sylvia, the main thing is to let people know that this WP Council is not just some government entity over there that you really rely on, almost demand. Hey, look, get a hold of this thing. Get online. What are some of the other things? I mean, we got a mountain full of stuff here.
Right. Well, so we want it, like we said, it's the fishermen themselves that come to us with the issues and the solutions. And one thing they can do besides going on the website and getting educated is they can try to join the advisory panel that we have.
Amen.
Yeah, so we have a brochure on that, on who's your current advisory panel members, but they meet monthly and to discuss, you know, issues, and then those issues and recommendations come before the council, which the council meets 3 times a year.
That's why we said bottoms up. And every time we do that, and I've had the opportunity through Sylvia to be one of the presenters or the MC at this thing for several years now. And I, number one, sometimes it's same old, same old. There's some real regulars, but every single time we do it, there's some new people. And it's like the pebble in the pond, right?
Right.
And so doesn't NOAA and the government expect, okay, council, this is what you need to do. Show us what's happening. How many people are you reaching out to? What are you doing?
Right. Yeah, they do. And so that's what we are there to advise the government.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've talked about, we're not just government entities. Yeah. We are the fishermen. We're from the bottom up.
Yeah.
But we do have on the council, state and federal officials also as advisors. So, and to make decisions. Yeah. So we like them to come to the council meetings, but we know that the council meetings are during the daytime and not everybody can come.
But that's the forum, the Fishers Forum, always in the evening.
That's why we always hold it in the evening. Yep. So the next one is going to be in March, mid-March. I think it's on the 14th. And it's from 6 to 9 p.m. Mm. We're going to be at the Dole Cannery Ballroom.
Dole Maikai Ballroom.
Yeah, and we change the subject every time, try to do something current. And as I was talking to you, Mike, this next one, we're hoping to have the different media people who have covered fisheries over the decades and see what they think.
It really is amazing to me. And some of the local media, especially the television guys, they will assign somebody in an area that they have expertise or they like. Like, for instance, if you're looking for an investigative person, it's Lynn Kawano or Rick Desog. For instance, if you're looking at homelessness, it's usually Allison Blair. And there are certain people like Ron Mizutani and others that say, wait a minute, it's a fishing story. I'm in. Because of that, and therefore, most of us get our news from those sources. But what a lot of listeners don't know is a lot of those sources get their news and their information from you.
Right, sometimes they get it from things like we were talking about, the Associated Press. Yeah, so it comes in and is looking at
a little bit altered on this. On some stories.
Yeah, so that's one thing we're going to look at too is like some of the misinformation or the gaps in information that are out there, so that people could get a better understanding of the importance of our fisheries and how they are well regulated.
You know, one of the things that I like, and there's a newsletter, and you did mention that the newsletter is that publication that's going to be online. Is it already online? Can you get it now?
Yeah, it's online. So if you don't get our communiques by email, you can go online and download it. But if you go to our website right now, we have a pop-up screen to try to get you to subscribe. You will get not only our newsletters, but our other communiques, announcements about meetings and even press releases at times. So, please go onto our website, wpcouncil.org, and sign up to get that.
Okay, I just clicked it on one of my in-studio report machines here. And one of the things that you see right away is the artwork for the code. But so when you go there, typically, it's pretty easy because the drop-down menus are what we do, news and updates, fishery plans and publications, which is what Sylvia and I are talking about today, lots of stuff. Managed fisheries, protected species, community development. This is what I like, education and outreach, and finally a calendar of the meetings that are coming up. And also, you can get previous episodes of the program by clicking on that part of it too. So there really is, if you want to spend some really quality family time, dad or mom, or if you're trying to teach a person to fish or show a person what fishing's like, isn't it kind of nice not just to be able to go to the beach, but to sit out in the family room with a fan on and watch something?
Right.
Online. Everybody can do that now,
Videos, there's coloring books. And also, as we have high school summer courses that high school students can join. And
I'm going to tell you about that coming up pretty soon. And there are internships available.
Internships.
And scholarships.
And college scholarships.
Okay, so that being said, and I do know that there's change. We had a lovely opportunity to spend some time in the last couple of months with a couple of folks who retire. We all age and we all go away or we do something else. Senior scientist Paul Dalzell has retired, as has Charlie Ka'ai'ai, the indigenous coordinator. But what is really good, and both of them said that, they're excited because the baton is being passed. There is a way that people get involved in this fishery. So spend a minute on that by going to the website. You might say, I don't want to be a fisherman when I grow up. But you may not want to be a fisherman, but you might want to have a fish market or a restaurant,
right?
Or you might want to be an environmentalist. You can learn all those things.
Yeah, or through our scholarship program, a part of that is after they get their degree, they have to work locally in their fishery agency for as many years as they got the scholarship, which is usually 2 to 2.5 years. And so right now in the Saipan, we have one person there that's doing their data, fish collection data entry, and we have one person in American Samoa who's working on their marine protected areas.
That's really important, and I've had the opportunity to meet and interview some of these people, and what happens is they make that commitment Sylvia mentions, and lo and behold, at the end of the commitment, they just sign right back up again. They find this is the niche that I want it to be.
Right.
And isn't it true, you've heard this a lot, where people, in the past, if they wanted to help in Hawaii, they had to go somewhere else and learn something. And that's very, very true of the CNMI and Samoa and Guam and places. They just don't have the opportunity to get the higher education. So they're not going to Cornell or Florida. They're coming to Hawaii.
Right. They're coming to that. Yeah. So we have a memorandum of understanding with the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology and UH Hilo and Hawaii Pacific University and then different community colleges in the territories. But we really, too, are trying to beef up the fisheries education that is offered here in our universities. You know, people are getting marine science degrees, but, you know, the focus on fisheries can be more detailed.
It didn't used to be that there were opportunities. And I think now, and I think that part of this has been due to the culinary explosion that we've had in Hawaii and the fact that people start looking back and saying, well, what's really good to eat? And, you know, what's really good for us? And fish is high on that list. And there are more people eating more fish than before. That means not only does the fishery have to be managed, but the ancillary things like chefs and planners and nutritionists and everything else, they've got to be a big part of that.
Yeah, and, you know, we've had fishers forums, you know, highlighting the seafood industry. And also we used to annually go to the NOAA Fish Fry in D.C. and bring our top chefs over there so that the people in D.C. know, you know, how important our fish are. And we have a recipe book where we've highlighted all of our recipes from that NOAA Fish Fry. Plus, in our newsletter, we have a recipe every quarter.
The cover of that is our friend Naoki with his gyotaku of a marlin. And I remember when Nico Shays from Nico's went there to barbecue. And it's an eye-opener, but now they expect it. Hawaii's become very well known and respected for our great restaurants. Guys like Chef, like Roy and Alan Wong and all of these guys. Mm-hmm. And the thing that's really neat, and I think that the council is a big part of this, is they actually encourage competition. It used to be, if you owned a restaurant, you were the only restaurant in town. You wouldn't want people to know anything about any other restaurant except yours. Now you see these guys linking arms and walking down the street together because they realize that people want variation.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, in our last newsletter, not only the Hawaii cuisine is getting recognized everywhere, but poke. Yeah. Poke is growing all over the United States mainland and in Europe. But going about the different restaurateurs now working together, you know, we have had workshops on fish flow, because that's one thing that people are interested in. There's misinformation is, where do the fish go that are landed by Hawaii Fisheries? Are they exported? Yeah. Do they go to the mainland?
It comes in, it all goes on an airplane somewhere else.
Right, and it doesn't. The majority stays here. And so we're
95%, I think, stays here. It's an amazing big number.
Yeah, so we're trying to get more details on that.
You know, gang, some of the other things we could go on, and we will next week when we reconvene again with Sylvie. We're going to talk about more things. But right now, I'd like to know from you, if you're listening today, if we can answer something maybe next time that will be of value for you to learn. Because not only I hope you've learned that there's some conceptions and some misconceptions, what we're talking about in the Culinary Institute. When you go up to like KCC and stuff, people are being shown how to be selective in their fish, which means when you go to a restaurant in Hawaii, Sylvia, people have an advantage here that they don't have in restaurants in other places. Our chefs, especially our local ones, they know what a fresh fish is. They don't hide it with the sauce. They eat, you know, you're gonna get the best food and actually the best price because it's competitive.
Right. Yeah. So the local fish is all fresh, landed. It's not frozen. And so, you know, talking about health issues they've had with fish, that's all been imported fish. Mm-hmm. So that's a reason to buy locally caught and landed fish.
Yeah, and that's why not only are all of us fish eaters, but the great recipe exchange is terrific. So I want you to pay attention to that. I forgot about that recipe book. It's pretty cool. And also at the next forum, there's going to be, if you'd like to attend, there's always some handouts, some really interesting things, and among them are quite often recipes. And we know that if you're paying, good money for good fresh fish, the less you waste and the better ways you cook it to get the value out of the fish, the better. That's why we want to talk about eating so much. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because we're all the same inside. So there's all kinds of handouts and everything. In the next couple of weeks, we'll be showing you specifically what some of the things are. But just, I want people to understand, just before we leave on this session, Sylvia, because you're in charge of communications for the council, what is the mission of the council?
Well, the mission of the council is to ensure we have sustainable fisheries into the future, mm-hmm. and for cultural reasons, for social reasons, for our nutrition, for economic reasons, for individual businesses, as well as the revenue of the states and territories.
Which is a huge job. By the way, when you start looking at revenue, we may not have the biggest revenue of any harbor in the country for fishing, but the the per pound revenue, the top quality revenue is ours.
Right. Yeah. Well, actually, we're as value landed, we're always Honolulu is one of
number
the top
one.
Five.
Yeah. Sometimes
is
in the top five
because of the Big Eye tuna is valued so highly. Mm. But also, I want to say, when I say sustainable fisheries, you know, it's not all economics. To keep sustainable means you have to keep the stocks and the environment healthy. Mm-hmm. And so that's a big mission of ours.
And it also helps, by the way, in enforcement. Everybody enforces things in different ways, but they have to know what they're enforcing. So they have to have a number or an area or a geographic map that they're supposed to be taking care of. And that's another thing that you guys participate in, because enforcement doesn't necessarily know the migratory patterns or where the fish might be, right? And Big Eye tuna, you might have caught a whole bunch of it over here last year. You go over there, there's none.
Right.
But it moved 100 miles, but you didn't know that.
Right. Yeah. So U.S. Coast Guard is also on the council. A member of the council. They do a lot of the enforcement. And like I said, for those highly migratory fish like tuna and billfish, a lot of it's managed internationally. And so we are, you know, we advise the delegation, the U.S. delegation that goes to those forums. And that's where a lot of the data is collected to monitor the fishery. And the United States is probably the most compliant country when it comes to that.
That's so exciting. Okay, now, gang, here's the deal. We want you to go to WPCouncil.org. And if you've got anything that you you heard today, or that you go to WPCouncil.org and come up with, we love questions from you. As a matter of fact, we are also gauged by our value to the council, by how many people are we serving, and more importantly, are they hungry birds in the nest? What is it that you want to know? I mean, I think if you've probably learned a little bit today, but there's so much more to come. That's why we've decided to break our segment with Sylvia Spaulding, a communications director of the council, into two parts, because there's just no way we could handle it all in one. What keeps you smiling every day when you go to work? What's so fun about working for this council?
Well, my day starts out looking at news clips for the first hour, so I get to see what's going on nationally and internationally and passing that around. And then, you know, just I work on a lot of publications, but also a lot of outreach. You know, we're going to be like New Hope just called us to have a booth, you know, down at their July 7th fishing derby. So we're going to do that. And, you know, teachers are always calling us for the lunar calendar, for the 2019 lunar calendar. Yeah. I'm going to actually
be... Color books guides are great.
Going to be featuring Hina, working with women in prisons who are using the lunar calendar for their rehabilitation. And so, so there's just all, working with people, working with fishermen, you know. There's never a dull moment.
And, you know, it's really something. I mean, not everybody gets a chance to go to the fish auction, but you can sure get a chance to know what goes on there. There's all kinds of stuff on the auction on the website. And I want to tell you that Sylvia brought literally a 25-pound bag of rice with 40 pounds of rice in it. There's a ton of stuff available. And they're actually looking forward to extending you the stuff. You're not hoarding the stuff. You want it out. You want it to get disseminated.
Right, and it's all free.
Yeah.
You know,
that's the bottom line.
It's all free. So if you want calendars, we have books. You know, we have displays. You know, just whatever, you know, and we're open to ideas. If there's things you think are lacking and needed out there to for the public and fishermen to understand fisheries and to keep it sustainable, let us know.
There you go. Give it a call. You want to go to WPCouncil.org. That's WPCouncil.org. And you can email me, themikebuckshow@gmail.com, with your questions for next week. And guaranteed that if you ask me a question, you know, today, email it. We'll get you an answer next week, and we'll get you a direction to point in. And you know, listen, we've learned this over the years. There's no such thing as a dumb question. Bring it. And thanks for listening, and thanks for our friends from POP Fishing and Marine earlier. And, of course, Sylvia Spaulding, Communications Officer at the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council. I'm Mike Buck. Have a great weekend. See you next time. Aloha.